Welcome to the third series of my podcast, Beyond the Water Cooler. I'm Lisa. As a psychologist, psychotherapist, and a business owner of It's Time for Change, I'm lucky enough to get involved with so many different aspects of employee engagement and experience. Whether that's about leadership style, mental health, the metaverse, retention and recruitment, after action reviews, or so much more, there is something on this podcast for everyone. My mantra is simple. Get people right, get business right. You'll get to hear from some really interesting people who have stories, insights, and strategies to share about what it takes to be a great company with inspiring leadership, an awesome culture, and a wow workforce. So let's dive in. This was going to be a first with two guests joining me today, but Chris Murray can't make it, choosing instead to meet with Ferrari. So effectively, I've been stood up. That means my facilitation skills for a three-person podcast aren't going to be called upon today, so I can relax a little. But I'm very pleased to be joined by Rob Smedley, who is CEO and founder of the Smedley Group. So welcome, Rob.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you very much for having me.
That's a pleasure. So this conversation is primarily going to be around exploring after action reviews, or AARs, as a tool to driving positive change. But before we get into that, it'd be really good to understand a little bit more about what the Smedley Group is about. I know that when I was first invited to work with you, my first thought was that I know nothing about motorsport. And it was actually a really good test to find out if what I put on those forms, you know, when you get those forms where it says, what industry do you work in? And you have to identify a particular sector, I put people. So I work, it doesn't matter what the industry is. And this is a really good test. I'm going into a company that I know nothing about what they do. I'm essentially working with people. And I think that has worked out quite well. And I'm learning about motorsport as I go along, which is great. So tell us more about what you do, Rob, what your company is about your mission.
Okay. So, I've been involved in motorsports for 25 years now, longer actually professionally, and predominantly all of that time was spent in Formula One. So it's been spent in or around the fringes of Formula One motorsports. I spent a long time in the teams, and therefore I've seen what, you know, good looks like. I've seen what the best looks like. I was at Ferrari for 12 years, and I think we won 7 world championships in the period of 10 years or something like that. I can't quite remember what the stats are. Someone else will remember. So I kind of saw what good looks like, and was very privileged to be part of that good. You know, and I got, you know, I got the point, say 5 years ago, where I wanted to do something different. You know, I'd done a lot of Formula One. I'd done it since from a very young age. For various reasons, I had ascended the greasy pole of management. And I got to the point where I thought, right, I want to do something different now. So I started this business. And it started out as an idea of pretty much how do we use sports, motorsport in particular, because that's the sector that I'm from, to drive positive impact in people's lives. How do we use sport as a force for good, right? And you know, that's it seems like such an obvious thing, but it's not always that difficult, you know, in terms of a concept. Using sport as a force for good is a simple concept. To execute upon that and to circumnavigate all of the legacy and all of the existing infrastructure in any sport is difficult. And in a sport as rich in heritage as motorsports, you know, that's doubly difficult. But you know, I kind of looked at it and said, how do we get more kids involved in motorsport? I think this is a really interesting dichotomy that we've got in motorsports, that we are an industry or a sector with a superficial glamour, therefore we have You know, we only choose the best people to come into our industry. And that's non, you know, it's more true than ever in terms of engineering and technology and drivers. But then we kind of haven't got this wide pool of, you know, this really wide participation, like base down at the very grassroots, that's going to percolate up to the top. You know, if you take the driving side of it, then, you know, it's very difficult to get into. It's very expensive. It becomes, you know, effectively it's single demographic, it's white privilege. And that's what kind of gets, you know, comes up to the top in Formula One. And another pinnacle series. So it's kind of like, well, how would we change that? How do we change the paradigm here? And how do we get change it so it's a much more democratized sport? So that was kind of the initial concept of what the business was going to be all about. And then we've diversified into lots of different areas. You know, we've become an advanced technology business. So we're using our skill sets to, you know, we do projects for the great and the good, and help them to, you know, either understand or to make better their product, whatever their product could be. It might be a racing car, it might be a racing series, it might be something that is not connected with motorsport at all, but has a leaning towards technology. And then there's the very purpose-driven element, which is what, you know, from that original idea and concept, which has become a real thing, which is Total Karting Zero.
Mm.
And Total Karting Zero is a series, it's electric karts. We design and develop, we do all of the engineering and technology in-house and design and develop these karts. And then we also have a different way of running the series. So it doesn't mean that, you know, we're a B2C business where we go direct to consumer, at the level where we operate in the UK, where, you know, the customer, the young driver and their family come along and they pay a fixed fee. So it's significantly reduced in price, cost and in complexity. Plus there's a very even playing field because all these electric carts are exactly the same. And therefore it's a completely different way of doing motorsport. Our aim is to, you know, you come in, and in the front end of this year, let's say, when we were just introducing the second generation of the new Total Karts. And then our very ambitious plan is to get out and be on a global stage by Q1 next year. And we've got, you know, franchisees, clients lined up where we're actually building now the third, where we're designing and developing the third generation of carts, which are going to go into the franchises. So really exciting business, lots going on. I'm certainly busier now than I was in Formula One, but it's very rewarding. There's you know, it's nice to certainly give back.
And I love your sort of strap line, which is about disrupting the status quo and making motorsport fairer, faster, cheaper and cleaner. And yeah, I like the fact that you've also got, you know, you combine motorsport with technology and an academy. So you're kind of pulling different strands together to, I guess, have a broader sort of more inclusive approach, you know, looking at the whole picture rather than just one particular bit of it.
Yeah. And, you know, as much as I love, you know, we're doing all sorts of exciting partnerships and JVs with, you know, some of the biggest, some of the biggest businesses on the planet, the biggest business on the planet, actually, we're doing quite a lot of work with, so work that one out. You know, I love doing that, but equally at the same time, I think this comes from being an engineer. I'm, you know, so many years in Formula One, I'm also a control freak, in a good way, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're now going to get all of your young listeners who might have wanted to come and apply for jobs here. Something like, oh my God, I don't want to work for him. So in a good way, is there ever a good way to be a control freak? In a way that, you know, there's an ecosystem here, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, the motorsport part, which is the operational part. There's the technology part of, like, which is the hardware that drives those events. And then there's the human part, which is the academy. And I just thought, well, why not set up a business which is able to be across the whole of the ecosystem. And then the bits that we, you know, if there's bits of it within the existing ecosystem or infrastructure that let's face it, for want of a better word or want of a better phraseology, I don't like, I'm going to build that in-house and I'm just going to do it what I think is better. It might not be better, but in my, you know, perception, it's better. So that's kind of the business that we're building. And I like to, you know, make it clear to the people that work here, you know, our ambition is massive. Our ambition is huge. You know, we are, you know, I don't want to confine us into any particular box. I don't want to be just a motorsport company, or I don't want to be just a technology or a tech company, or, you know, and I don't say that with arrogance when I say just a motorsport company. All I'm trying to convey here is I want this to be, you know, I want this business to grow and accelerate and to become something really, really important, and something that all of the, you know, the men and women that work here are proud of as well. I'm proud of building. So that's why kind of we are, you know, as you said, a technology business, a motorsport business, and an academy business. And I think that just that means that I've got a vehicle where I can just go and create whatever part of the business that I want. It allows me to mock.
But that's awesome. And I love, you know, you're never going to be just a company, I'm just a motorsport company or whatever, because you are so driven by a very clear purpose, which is about doing good for people and being more inclusive and being more diverse. And I know conversations, you know, when you showed me the carts and, you know, you're talking about how you've just come across amazing talent when you've been able to, you know, introduce the opportunity to have a go to people who would never have otherwise been able to sit in such a cart. And you know, you're opening doors for people, and because you're driven by such clear values and you have such a clear purpose and that's shared across your company, you know, you will achieve amazing things. And also because you're looking at that big picture. So you are able to influence, because you're not just looking at one tiny part of it. You can, as you say, change the things that you don't like or change the things that you don't think are working. So that's good.
Yeah. I mean, exactly right. And I think that, you know, you've got to constantly validate what you're doing. And you know, the beauty of motorsports, let's say, or the beauty of Formula One, is I always describe it as, you know, there's 10 teams and they all effectively, you know, have to show each other their balance sheet or do their earnings call every 2 weeks. You know, every 2 weeks they go and race. And it's just like a business that has to do their earnings call, yeah? But it's a really, really honest earnings call. It's not like, well, here's our profit, but actually it looks really much better than that. If you look behind and here's the EBITDA and like, okay, we're all lost now. So just ring the bell and we can all go home. It's a really honest earnings call, because it's like, here's qualifying and here's the fastest car and here's the 20th car. Yeah. And here's the race and here's the winner and here's the last place. Yeah. So it's kind of like the most honest earnings call that you can imagine, and you can't hide behind anything. And I love that brutality of motorsport and Formula One. And I think it's the same with what we're doing now. You know, I'm constantly saying to the team, you know, either, you know, my senior team downwards, you know, we won't get it right. Don't hope to ever think that we're going to be perfect, because I will never declare perfection, right? It's impossible. I've never declared it in 25 years. So I'm not about to start now. And that is meant to be, you know, hopefully that we do that in a way that is a positive motivation for people. We have this thing called continuous improvement. This thing where, you know, nothing is ever good enough in a good way. And actually it's a good point. I think, did this come out in the AR that I don't celebrate success enough? I think it might have.
I think it did.
And that is actually, we're getting into my foibles now. I know that this is, I was at the Italian Grand Prix at the weekend, the Formula One race, and I was talking to some partners there, and they were making exactly the same comment. They were saying, seem like somebody who's never happy. And I'm like, I am happy. I'm internally happy. It just doesn't come out. Because they were like, we were celebrating the success of something that we'd done. And I was like, yeah, great, okay. But what are we doing tomorrow? Yes. How are we making it better?
Yes, which works for you. But as you say, the people around you might need every so often just to go, oh, okay, we have achieved something great, and we can just celebrate that for a moment before moving on. So in terms of your mission, there are some strong opinions about it. And I know that from when I wrote a LinkedIn post a while ago about your purpose and your vision and how you're doing something quite different. And there were lots of really, really positive, supportive comments. And there are a few that were saying, actually, you know, that's not what motorsport's about, or that's not possible, and so on, in response to your purpose. Do you meet much resistance, or do you think actually people are quite open to welcoming change in an industry that has worked in kind of quite traditional way for quite a long time?
Both, I would say. We meet with some very informed people who support us, and some
less informed.
Yeah. Complete imbecile. No, I mean, honestly, in all seriousness, yeah, we do meet with both. I would say, and I don't know what this may be backed up by the response to your post, or you may have seen the same thing. I would say the majority of people definitely support what we're doing.
Yeah.
And then you tend to get people who are less supportive, and become quite vitriolic in their views as well as to. But we, you know, I think that's good. You know, you have to have people who in any sector, and look, if we are, you know, we are disruptive, but we want to be additive as well. You know, I don't want to come into this and say, well, everything doesn't work. I'm coming into this and saying he's an alternative. You know, I don't want to. For one moment, we're not trying to say let's change everything. We're trying to create change, but we're trying to do it in an additive way.
Yeah,
and just give people other options.
Yeah.
So you know, to use the old adage that we use here, you know, Aldi or the supermarkets came in and democratized food shopping. Selfridge's food hall and Harrods food hall are still open and still thriving. Thank you very much. So you know, we're just trying to give people who can't afford to go to Selfridges and Harrods to do their weekly shop an option here, right? Yeah. And in doing that, it means that, you know, our main aim, absolutely what we're trying to do, is unearth talent. And if this unearths talent that eventually ends up at the pinnacles of motorsport, Formula One, Formula E, World Rally Car, I can't really see that there's anything that offensive about it, to be quite honest. You know, let's see.
You know what? I'm with you on that. And I think actually when you're driving change, you don't want 100% of people behind you, because it's not really change. You know, the change means that you're disrupting things. And there's always going to be someone who doesn't like it for whatever reason. It could be they didn't believe it's possible. It could be just goes against tradition. Whatever the reason, and actually it's just being clear about why you're doing something and sticking with that.
Well, we've got, I mean, you know, first of all, you know, we're 3 years in now, and it's been a fairly disruptive 3 years, you know, with the global pandemic. But already we're starting to see that we are unearthing talent from, you know, backgrounds that would just not get this chance. They would just not be on the grid and winning. There is absolutely no way. And I can say that hand on heart. So that bit is working. And you're quite right, Lisa. There's always, when you're making change, when you're being disruptive, you're always going to get people who kind of, you know, rise up and go against it. And the more you know, the more that happened, I think the more motivated we are as a team, the more we kind of look at it and go, yeah, all right, well, that just means that we just got to work harder and do better. And continue to improve. And you know, I think one of the really nice things about this business, and I hope this starts from me, you know, all the way through the business, is that we're super honest, right? People kind of, you know, I've never been, my old adage is, if we're not making mistakes, then we're not innovating. How can you innovate and do something new if you're not going to make mistakes? And we're really honest about those mistakes. You know, we're effectively a B2B business, but we are B2C in what we do with the electric carts and Total Karting Zero. And there's, you know, it's fine to be able to stand up and go, hey, we're doing something which is quite new here, quite revolutionary. And yeah, we didn't get it right. But guess what? We're going to learn from that. We're going to do it right next time.
Exactly. And that ties in really well with actually how you set your business up, which is all around culture, behaviors, and expectations. And I think it'd be really interesting to unpick that a little bit in terms of what that culture means for you, kind of what those behaviors are and so on. Because I know when I first started having conversations with you and Chris, and I got a big picture of how you're going about setting up your company to be different from what perhaps you've experienced in the past, and to be based around psychological safety and honesty and making mistakes and, you know, being authentic and so on. That is a huge driver for, as you say, innovation, creativity, people just being able to be honest and learn from their mistakes really quickly. So for you, what are the kind of key parts of that culture or those behaviors or those expectations that you have worked hard to create so that your company works as effectively as it can?
Well, I think you saw, you know, our mandate to the business, that when we moved into this new shiny building and we wanted to kind of, you know, that was, you know, start of what we call phase two of the business. And we sat everybody down, we went into a big meeting room, presented to everybody what were, you know, the cultures, what were our expectations, what were the behaviors of this business in general. And I think, you know, that for me is so important, because that underpins, you know, it's not project based. It's not that there's a particular outcome that we want on Wednesday and then we've delivered that. We're trying to create the very fabric of the business. I think what behaviors and cultures do is they're just something that we are just embedded in. We just live with them every day. Now, it's easier said than done, because you get people from all sorts of different backgrounds that join your organization. And some of them will be able to, you know, the vast majority of them will be able to kind of, you know, eventually embed themselves in the fabric of that those cultures and behaviors, and some of them won't, right? It's just a fact of life that some of them won't be able to do it. But I think that overall, if there's a couple of behaviors or cultures that are really, really important, then it's honesty and transparency. And it goes back to what I was talking about before, because I think that has to be the bedrock of any successful business, right? Be honest. If you're not very good, just be honest about it. It's fine, right? But if we can, you know, the first step, and I've always said this, you know, since I've been, you know, leading teams from a younger age to, you know, running businesses, you know, the first step in solving any problem is admitting you've got one, right? We hide behind, you know, some facade that we're all perfect and we're all great, and it's really just a house of cards behind it ready to collapse.
Yeah.
You're never going to grow and you're never going to develop. You're never going to get yourself to the next stage of where you want to get to. And so, you know, I think from honesty and transparency, there's lots of different behaviors and cultures that come out of that, you know, integrity. Right, we should have a lot of integrity about what we do. You know, I'm always keen that as a business we do the right thing. Right. And I think if the CEO is doing the right thing, the rest of the business will be inclined to do the right thing. I think if the CEO is cutting corners and perhaps, you know, doing things which don't have a great deal of scruples attached to him, the rest of the business will behave like that, you know. And I've worked for both types of CEO.
Yeah.
No names.
Just in the show notes.
Yeah.
but you are very good at leading by example. And I know from being in the room with you and your team, you know, you are open to hearing the feedback, and actually your those around you speak quite honestly, and there's a bit of humor, and that is kind of like gold dust sometimes. You just don't see that. People say they're open to it, but they're not really. And I think, you know, that whole facade about actually we're fine, but behind the scenes, everything's crumbling. I think those companies are being called out much quicker now, you know, in terms of the current context, and people if they don't like what's actually happening behind closed doors, then they're walking. So you've got to have those foundations for people to be able to work well as a team and to feel excited about what they do and so on. And I think, you know, you've worked hard to do that. And I guess that also leads on to why you were open to doing the after action review, because that's about, okay, let's be honest and open about what's good and what's not so good, and learn from that. So for listeners who aren't familiar with the AAR process, I'm just going to give a really, really quick overview. So essentially, when we hit pause and we ask the right questions, we can highlight the strengths and we can find out what can be done differently next time so that we can make that experience more positive. We can make it easier to engage and to perform well. And ultimately, then we're obviously increasing our future success. I guess in many organizations, there's that sense that people like to cover their back, or they feel the need to cover their back. There's that sense of, right, who's to blame when something doesn't work well, doesn't go according to plan, instead of actually focusing on the learning. And I think it's really clear from your company, Rob, that actually you're about continuous development and continuous improvement. So you need to learn. So when we ask those key questions that are involved with an AAR within a context of that psychological safety, we can gather a huge amount of information that's really useful to drive that positive change. And the key questions that we asked when we conducted the AAR with your company were, what did you set out to achieve? What was supposed to happen? What actually happened? Why was there a difference? What worked well and why? What didn't work well and why? And what can we improve upon and how? So what I'm curious to ask you about, Rob, is firstly, how did that come about in terms of thinking, yes, we want to engage with that AAR process? Because that's quite a big thing to say, right, we want someone to come in and effectively scrutinize what we're doing well and what we're not doing well. So what motivated you to do that?
I think it's not only scrutinizing what we're doing well and what we're not doing well, it's also that, you know, it's really important that, you know, it's run by somebody, you know, external like yourself, Lisa, but it's also then you kind of get in a room and there's no hierarchy there as well. Mm. You know, there has to be, you know, in our utopian world, we probably look at it and say, well, there shouldn't be any hierarchy in the business. Or perhaps, you know, how do you reduce the hierarchy to allow creativity? I think it's just a fact of life that there has to be hierarchy. But when you go through processes like that, you have to kind of leave all of that at the door. Mm. And everybody is open in that, you know, psychologically safe environment. Everybody is open to scrutiny and to be able to say, well, actually, Rob, you didn't do very well there, you know, and this is, you know, not, you know, your area, Rob, let's say, is probably a safer way of putting it. You know, your deliverables there. So how do we do that better? So I think, you know, why did we engage with it? Because, well, basically, because, you know, I've done it for a long time now. And I'm a massive fan of it. You know, I'm not somebody, I've got no, I don't know whether this is a, maybe this is just me and my personality, or maybe this is just, you know, comes from, I hope I swear because it's a podcast, but having the shit kicked out of me for 20 odd years in Formula One, you know, it goes back to the brutality. There is nowhere to hide, right? Mm. You can't, you know, tell your board that everything's great and everything's fine and we're just doing all right and just, you know, I'm going to do my earnings call at the end of the year and then you're going to see. You don't get that in sport. You know, you get out there every weekend and you see how good you are. And that's what it's like in Formula One. And I think that if you're not entirely transparent and, you know, looking at every single aspect of your organization, you will fail. Mm. And therefore you can't be precious about it, whatever position you're in, you can't be precious. So we've, you know, I did it for a long time in Formula One, you know, and we used to do it at the kind of, we'd do it at the about 2-3 races into the season, and we'd look back at how the new car was designed, developed, built, brought to the track, tested, you know, brought to the first race, and what are the results. And just look back at that with brutal honesty about that process and say, well, how can we do it better? You know, exactly the questions that you asked. What went right? What did we expect to happen? What actually happened? And they're always different, right? Yes. The best in the world, they're always different. And therefore, how do we do it better next time? You know, where are we going to make improvements? And we're such a young business that my view on that is that effectively, you know, from where we want to get to, we're so far away from that. So what are, you know, and we might as well just accept that as being a truth. So what are the priorities of what we do better next time? Because next time won't be perfect either.
Yes.
But it will be, but let's make sure that step in the right direction. And let's make sure that the time after that is another step. That's kind of why I engage with it.
So I guess asking those questions is one thing, you know, asking for feedback. But what do you think helped your team to engage with that process so honestly and openly? Because I can imagine people listening to this, leaders thinking, well, it's all very well asking those people those questions, but they're not going to give me the honest feedback. So how do you reassure people that that discussion is for the right intention? It's not going to be used against them. No one's going to apparently hear the feedback and then the next day you're out of a job because you've criticized the someone who's in charge. So how did you go about setting the scene, or how do you think it came about that actually the whole of your team engaged incredibly well with that process?
Well, I honestly think there's two clear answers to that. First of all is, you know, it's that honesty and integrity in the way that you go about things and allowing people the freedom to be creative and tell the organization what's right and what's not right. That has to just be the fabric of your business. You can't have a toxic environment where, you know, the CEO goes around with a big rod and like hits people over the head just out of turn 364 days a year, and then on the 365th you go and do your AR and expect everybody to be honest. It's never going to work. So if you're running an organization like that, I'd suggest that an AR might be an abject waste of time for you.
Or you do it behind closed doors, one-to-one, and you get the real set of data, then you hand that back to the leader.
And they do nothing with it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's the first, that has to be the first fundamental step, right? But then the second step is how you run the day, you know, and I've always, you know, when we first engaged leaders, I was always adamant that it's not me running it. I can stand up and I can introduce it, but then really I should be allowed to kind of meld into the background. And you're right that, you know, we do run the business, or we do have a culture, an environment when we all get together where we can be, especially in an environment like that, like an offsite type thing, where, you know, it shouldn't be hierarchical. People should be comfortable and say what they want to say. It's still difficult, right? Even if you do all of that, it's still difficult for a junior person to sit in front of the chief executive of a business and say, I don't think this business is run very well. Yeah. But actually, that's if you can make that happen, possibly not verbatim, then you are running a really good business, and it will be a business that will be eventually very, very successful.
Absolutely. And I think what was really clear when we ran it was that there were some people who knew that it was safe to speak up. And so they started speaking up and being quite open and honest. And then others are observing and noticing that they're not being shot down or whatever. And it's about having the courage. And I think as you repeat this process in the future, you'll notice that there's more and more of that's forthcoming, because people aren't just hearing the reassurance that this is for the right reasons. They're actually experiencing, yes, I'm being asked for my true feedback, my opinion, and it is shaping what we do differently in the future. And it's only contributing to a positive outcome rather than anything else. So I think that's hugely important. And I think also on the day we set time around setting the scene. So we looked at things like the impact of fear about that feedback. So everyone sitting in that room start off with wondering what on earth is going to be said about them or their contribution to the project. And we looked at how fear impacts our behavior, how it impacts our thinking. We looked at positive conflict and what people need in order to feel okay about disagreeing with other people. We looked at awareness around increasing emotional arousal and how that shuts down our ability to be open-minded and innovative and to hear things in the way that they're meant. So actually just doing, having some of that upfront conversation about setting the scene, saying this can feel difficult, but it's really important because, and this is how to manage it safely and so on. I think that makes quite a difference.
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, the way that you set it up, you know, you're in the room, so I shouldn't say this, but, you know, the way that you set it up, I think was brilliant, you know, and the way that you set it up to be, I think you were able to do a, and these, the best ARs are always like that, where you're able to kind of, you know, make sure that people feel comfortable and people are going to be honest, because there's no point having an AR where everyone says, oh, Rob's just brilliant, you know, and the project was brilliant and there's nothing else really to say, you know, and you know, just using those, you know, that whole, I thought it was really good the way that you described, you know, the psychological response, because that was actually something that I was kind of aware of, but had never had it explained in that, like, you know, that scientific way of psychology of, like, you know, when you go into the emotional part of your brain, you're making really bad decisions. And, you know, so how do we stop ourselves from doing that? And you know, how does that become, you know, how do we take the emotion out of work? And I think that's something that I've naturally done, like, over probably a period of time. I think I was probably, anyway, a little bit built like that. Then that's definitely something, again, coming from, you know, that Formula One environment that helps with that. But, you know, going back to the way that it was all kind of set up on the day, and then the way that, you know, you were able to challenge me or the senior team and make sure that you know, that was seen as something that was a really positive thing within that environment, I just think the whole thing worked really, really well. And I think then, you know, going to, as we went on afterwards, to then, you know, publish the result and talk about the results and talk about, you know, what was going to be the positive change coming out of that, the whole process has been really important,
because that's a really important part, isn't it, in terms of, right, you've asked the questions and you've got the data, but then what? So it's that, and I think sometimes companies are really good at asking, well, they might be good at asking questions, but and then they get some of the data that comes back, but then it's about what they do with that. And I think, you know, how you used it in terms of saying, yeah, we need to do this differently, we need to do this better, we've realized there's a gap there. How did you go about getting all that feedback and using it in a way that was clear? It's about driving that positive change. So what did you do to ensure that the outcomes you got from that process actually turned into positive outcomes, you know, changing actual practice?
So what we did was, we, you know, I'm very data driven, but I'm also an engineer with a strong bent to mathematics. So I'm kind of like your worst nightmare of a geek. but it's for me, what that means is, you know, you need to be able to assimilate a lot of data and analyze and process a lot of data, in this case, feedback, answers to the questions that were asked, and then distill that down into really, you know, elegant solutions. So for, you know, I think we come out with, you remember better than me, we come out with four or five really clear pillars and areas of where to work.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a case of then saying, right, so here's the answers and here's what we're going to do. What I really liked about that next stage of the process was it was distilling all of that data, if you like, down into four clear areas of where we needed to work and four clear pillars of how, you know, we had to do better. But then it was about creating working groups within the business and then empowering the rest of the business and more junior people within the business to come and actually make those changes. So, right, well, we're going to have a working group, and we're going to have a working group for each of these four areas, and they will have some senior people in them, they will have some more junior people in them, but all of you are responsible for making positive impact in this area where we've been lacking in the past. And I think that was, that has worked really well. And we found a lot of engagement from the business in doing it like that. Some areas are faster moving than others. In some areas, we've been able to make massive progress. In other areas, we've been able to make, progress has been a little bit slower. But the incredibly important point here is we are making progress.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. And everyone's empowered to be part of that change, which is lovely. Yes. So rather than I just giving the feedback to the senior management team who are going to go off and decide what they want to do with it, actually, we are all getting all of the feedback and we're all able to put our name forward to say, actually, we would like to be involved in shaping that part of the business differently. Yeah. And that's so motivating. It means everyone, again, you've got everyone's buy-in, haven't you? Everyone's motivated to try and achieve that, for the next project to be sort of even better than the last one. And I know actually when we finished this process, you were literally, I think the next day, starting your next project. It's very timely. How have the outcomes from that AAR process informed the new project or the current project that you're on now, in terms of have you been able to put stuff into practice quite quickly to make a difference to your working on that project now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from the very outset, we took the learnings, because there was some clear learnings. And let's say then there was these other areas where we knew we needed to work, but it would have been inappropriate to say, and here's what we're going to do to fix that. And then nobody engages with it and we don't actually move forward. So we took the clear learnings from day one. I think one of them was about communication around projects and about how we communicate internally, externally about projects, and how, it's clear to everybody what their roles and responsibilities are. So we took that immediately and we did it better when we rolled out, this next phase three project to the rest of the business. And what that's meant is there's just been, a different level of engagement with it. They've people have been able to step up and go, I know what the project is now. And I'm also, we're very clear about what the mission is. And perhaps we weren't clear about what the mission was in phase two. But so now we're really clear about what the mission is, and we're trying to find different ways of burning that into people's brains. Because I think people know the mission of a project, it empowers them to make really good and positive decisions. I'm not quite sure what the mission is or what the final outcome is. Everybody works, does their little bit of the chain, me included. But if you're a little bit unaware of what the strategy, what the strategic outcomes are, what the overall mission is, sometimes you get lost in your bit and you can't make decisions about that. When you come to a crossroads, you think, right, do I turn left? Do I go straight on? If you know what the mission is, if you know what you're trying to achieve from an overall objective point of view, it's very easy to make the right decision. You find that people just make the right decision. It's just embedded in their brain. So we find different ways of doing that and different ways of getting that to people. And then there's tons of stuff that we're doing, to be honest, that will hopefully make it better, like I said before, not perfect.
And I think that mission piece is really important, because there is so much now. It's all over LinkedIn. It's all over. I mean, there's so much around, be clear about your mission, about your purpose, and, the why people do what they do. And you are very purpose driven. You set up what you do around a very, very clear purpose. And you and your senior leadership team were very all sharing that same passion. But even despite your awareness around that, there was still that slight gap around, oh my goodness, we haven't actually communicated that as well as we could to the wider team. Now, you're someone who's really on the ball with all this. And I still think, despite what is out there on social media and just kind of out in that public space around the importance of purpose and vision and so on, it's still something that's so easy to get missed, that we assume, because I've got it all in my head and I'm really clear on how I'm running this business, and I'm really clear on what I want to achieve, that I think every one of my employees knows the same. And it's only when we were going through the process that we realized actually not everyone is as clear as you, which is understandable because you've got it all in your head. You're the person who's driving this. So I think it's a really good message actually for all leaders to think actually how clear are their teams around the why, you know, what is the mission? What is the purpose of, you know, what's their contribution achieving, working towards, what's the outcome? And I think if people could be a little bit clearer on that and revisit that, then that'd be motivating in itself.
I agree with you. And that's, you know, I know that we talked about, you know, my foible of not celebrating success. I think the other one is that, you know, there's all this stuff going on in my head. And it's probably been going on and swimming around my head for so long that I think, well, of course, everybody knows about that. It's clear. And you quite often like will like float something in a meeting room and people look at you blank face and you think, yeah, I haven't really done a good job of ever telling you about this, have you? It's just losing my head for now. But that is, you know, communication is so key. You know, I'm definitely with my senior team, I almost take the stance of over communicating. You know, I probably go a little bit, you know, too far into detail, but I've worked for plenty of people who have completely under communicated. And you know, that's quite difficult, but then, you know, so that's great. We're all informed. How do you make sure that cascades through the rest of the business? And how do you do it in a simple way as well? Right. Because you're dealing with all sorts of different competencies, and skill sets and even intellect levels, if I can, from the top to the bottom of the business. And that's not meant to say, that's not meant to say it goes from the top to the bottom of the business, but you just are, you're right. Yeah. There's just like this smorgasbord of all different skill sets. So how do you make sure that messaging and communication is distilled as well? Because that's really important. Just get it down to something that everybody in the business understands and it's relevant to everybody in the business as well. So just they're all aligned. We're all then aligned around a really simple vision and mission. And I think that's probably definitely something that we've learned that we need to do better this project compared to the last one.
And there's a real skill in that actually, isn't there? Because I think we're also time pressured that if you've got to get a message out there, it's very easy just to kind of bang an email out or expect someone to pass a message on, and actually we don't necessarily give enough time to think, okay, how's that going to land? Is that the, am I communicating in the right way? Will people absorb the real message from an email, or, you know, do they need to hear it face to face? They can ask questions, or kind of what's the right mode for them? And what is it that they need to hear that's relevant to them? And I think that in itself is almost a job of trying to work out who needs to know what bit of information and how do they receive it. But even just knowing that actually you've got to work on that communication bit is enough to know that you're going to change stuff and that can only get better. So what two or three pieces of advice, or not even advice, must-dos, should leaders who are listening to this podcast go away and think, yeah, actually, I must do that. I've got to change something. I've got to do something a little bit differently. I'm going to reflect on something and maybe tweak something I do on a day-to-day basis or how I approach business. What would be your key pointers for people to go make a difference?
I think it's, you know, even though as a leader, you have to effectively, you know, have the vision, set the tone, set the strategy, or at least be the key architect in all of those things. I think that you also need to be able to gathering information from your organization has to be multi-directional. So it has to come from all the different, like, you know, areas within your organization. You know, you should be able to listen to, you know, the most junior layer in your organization, because they will have a view on how things work and they will see it from their point of view. And that's really important, right? You're seeing things. This is where the AR works so well, because I kind of look at stuff, you know, I went into that AR very clearly knowing that I was, you know, probably only 10% of what I was thinking was correct, but I had a really clear view on why things hadn't worked at the, you know, today's level of perfection. And the beauty of the AR is that you not only get to hear what your senior leadership, your my senior managers have a view on it, which is probably not that far removed from mine, right? Because they see it from up in the ivory tower.
Yeah.
You also get to see it from the very bottom of your organization as well, and all of the layers in between. And all of them have got a different view on things. And then it's how do you assimilate all them views so that you just come out with something which is better?
Yeah.
So I think if there's one key bit of advice to the leaders out there is to, how do you run your business? Yes, be resolute in what your vision and strategy is, but ensure that along the way you're listening to all the different levels of your organization, because they will be feeding back in between all of the white noise, of which you might not have time or don't want to listen to. The truth will be there, undoubtedly. The truth will be.
And it's almost like having your destinations very clear, but how you get there, you're on that journey. And I think you alluded to that earlier in the conversation, that you've got your, it's a journey. You don't quite know what it's going to look like, and you're all going on it together, and you might change course depending on what the feedback is. But it's that sense of we know where we're going, but we just don't quite know what the path is going to look like for the whole journey. And that's when you're able to say, we're going to work that out together, and you're honest about that, it's almost that sense of flattening the hierarchy and saying we're all in it together, we're all on the same bus getting to the same destination, and we've all got our part to play, which I think makes a huge difference to people being able to feel motivated and engaged and have a positive experience, but also just to shape in the success of the outcomes of that project.
Yeah, 100%. And I think having that, when I talked about before, setting the vision, setting the strategy within a business, the senior leader or senior leadership have to do that, or that single person has to do that. But that's just about setting where you're going. It's exactly what you're saying. It's about pinpointing where the destination is. I'm being pretty unwavering about that, unless there are, significant problems. And if they are, then you've got, I would suggest, bigger problems in your organization, but you've got somebody setting a direction which is wrong. But then it's about empowering everybody and being really honest about it and saying, but you know what? I've got half an idea how to get there. Yeah. And I know what I can tell you is when we get there, it's going to be brilliant, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to have made such a massive change and impact for the good, right? Or whatever our KPI in our business is, whether you measure performance. So I can tell you when we get there, it's great. But what I can also be honest with you about right now today is that I've got 25%, 35%, 10%, 5%, whatever it is, of an idea about how we're going to get there. But really, we're going to work as a team to get there, and everybody's empowered. And I think everybody's empowered. Everybody feels ownership around that. But I think there's another key element to this as well, is that if you can remain resolutely focused on that destination, on that vision, and you can rally everybody around that, it just makes the day-to-day drudgery and failure so much easier, so much more easier to accept, just get by, because people think, all right, it's a blip on the radar. But long-term, what is this blip really going to, is it really going to send us off course? Of course it's not, right? Yeah. It's day-to-day fire that we've just got to put out, right? So let's put that out. Let's take the emotion out of it, and let's continue on our journey. And I think if you can run your organization like that and keep letting people know it's all right, right? All right to fail. It's all right to get it wrong, because we're doing all of this. What that's going to do is it's going to actually, in the long run, have positive impact than us getting to our destination. Then it just makes all of that so much. It takes the emotion out of the business. And if there's one thing that my brain can't do, it can do a few things at an average level. But if there's one thing that it cannot do, it's emotion in the workforce. I just cannot do it.
But at least you're honest about that. So if you have emotions running high, you can send someone else in to deal with it.
I can deal with it. I mean, there's usually a few choice words thrown in. I've got no problem dealing with it, but it's just like, oh my God, this is such a waste of energy. We're creating entropy. We're not creating forward motion. We're just running around in an ever decreasing circle. And it's just, that just, you know, it does tend to get me down. Hopefully, you know, in this organization, I think we're really good, but
yeah,
whether that's accidental or whether that's something that has perhaps come from me and the team, I don't know. But
I don't think it's accidental. I think from my experience of how you set the team up and how you lead them, I don't think that's accidental at all. I think that's all about how you created that culture. Actually, people don't need to feel stressed every day and unhappy every day and everything. People are motivated. People are empowered to change things if they don't feel right. And I think that is that's intentional from how you're leading them. So give yourself credit. So as we wrap up the conversation, a question I'm asking all my guests in this series is, what's top of your list, personally or professionally, for the next 3 months?
I'm going to call it sustainable growth. We are growing as a business in all sorts of ways at such a fast rate. We have to remain on top of that, but we also have to do it in a sustainable way.
Mm.
You know, we can't do it in a way that, you know, we get 6 months, 18 months, 24 months down the line and suddenly the whole thing falls over because we've built this inefficient, you know, behemoth. So we do have to grow. We do have to expand. We do have to put layers of the organization within it that just simply don't exist at the minute, you know. We want to continue to have a flattish structure, but equally at the same time, it has to have some layers in it. And there's just some that absolutely don't exist. So we want to, you know, we have to be able to identify where those areas are that need work. And we're working very hard on that, actually, as an organization. I would say we put a lot of effort into that, especially across the senior leadership team. And that, as long as we're doing it in a sustainable way and we're doing it in a way that, you know, is going to be able to support itself, then I think it will take us on to the next evolution of the business. So definitely over the next 3 months, 3-6 months, you know, my focus and the business focus is on that, because
that growth is going to come with its own challenges, isn't it? Because trying to maintain the culture that you worked really hard to create when any company expands is always put under threat. And as you say, trying to make sure it's sustainable, it's making sure that people aren't at risk of burnout when you've got, you know, there's pressure on and, you know, you need people to be performing really well. It's about maintaining their own sense of well-being and you know, yeah, the health of the organization. So you're going to have your work cut out, but no doubt you're going to be awesome at leading that, because you're working from the premise that if you get it right for people, then they're going to be behind you and they'll be ready for that change in 3 months and 6 months and so on. So finally, Pete Sanders, who's one of my podcast guests, has provided a blind question for you, Rob. So given the Queen has recently passed and people are reflecting on what she achieved in her role, what would people say about you and your leadership legacy?
Oh, Pete, deep. Deep. Thank God for that. Maybe. I'm not talking about the legacy, I'm talking about the passing. Gosh, I don't know. I would hope to possibly be remembered for, you know, somebody who worked hard, was very authentic and genuine. You know, what you see is what you get. And you know, I hope at the end of all of this, we've made positive change to people's lives on a large scale. You know, and I'm not going to get into our boring, what we call our audacious targets are, because it's not about that. But safe to say, you know, if we hit all those targets, we'll have made positive change to people's lives on a global scale, so big scale, and I would hope to be remembered for that. And probably, you know, for having had a bit of fun along the way as well. You know, you gotta bring that into it. So I would hope that people always see me as approachable, and as a leader who is not kind of sat in their ivory towers and you know, you're not allowed to talk to, which is true, by the way. You're not allowed to talk to me within the organization unless you have five layers of executive assistants. But anyway, it's good for the podcast.
That's a good legacy. I like that. And I think that does sum up you well. And I think that sums up this conversation well. Rob, thank you so very much for joining me today and sharing what is important to you, what Smedley Group is all about, how the AAR has been of use to you, and just how you want to change the world. We are going to watch this space and see what the next 3 to 6 months and longer brings for you. So thank you very, very much. And yeah, good luck with what's to come.
Thanks, Lisa. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining me today on the Beyond the Water Cooler podcast. I hope it's got you thinking about how you can make a real difference to company culture that enables people to engage and thrive. I'm always about providing real value, and so I need your help. Please rate the podcast and review it to let me know what you have enjoyed and found helpful. Maybe you also have ideas about specific topics or guests who you would like to hear from in the future. If you would like to explore any of the points covered in these episodes, I would love to hear from you. Let's continue the conversation. Email me at It's Time for Change, or connect with me on LinkedIn, or why not pick up the phone? I love to walk and talk. My details are in the show notes. Please do let me know what inspires you. That way I can make sure what I'm talking about is most helpful. Until next time, bye for now.